Well, good morning. After spending the past year talking to about 100 different potential investors in the company and numerous bankers, some of which are sitting here today, it's very nice to be talking to our shareholders, people who are actually in the stock already. So I do appreciate everybody for coming. 2016 was a very exciting year for the company. Obviously, we did the IPO.
Forward-looking statements.
Anything I say that should, would, or whatever, just ignore.
You cannot rely.
You cannot rely on that.
And there's not yet.
Okay, in any case, through the IPO and through the ability of the company to generate a large degree of cash flow, we've been able to significantly improve our capital position. And I'll take you through taking a look at some of our brands, as well as closing two acquisitions. So I'll start with the capital. During the IPO, there was two significant blocks of capital that came into the company. The first was fresh capital that we raised on the outside, but we also converted a significant amount of debt. In doing so, we were able to take our leverage down from a recent peak of six times down to 4.1 times at the end of the IPO. That peak that you see there, going up from 5.2 to 6.1, was principally because of getting out of some very high yield debt. We had to buy our way out of it, and it just temporarily raised the leverage ratio. As a consequence of reducing that leverage, we also brought our interest expense down. Now, if you look back to 2012, 2013, essentially the vast majority of our cash flow, EBITDA, was being eaten up with interest expense. Essentially, we were working for the banks and the bondholders. Now, I don't know why the bankers smile when we say that, but
I get it.
We've been able to wind that down a little bit with the refinancing that took us out of that very high yield debt. And then with the IPO, we brought it down to $26.6 million. And as we look forward, we expect that the interest expense to run around $18 million. Now, essentially what that does is it takes the money that was going back into the capital markets to support our balance sheet and allows us to use it inside the company. And we have a number of ways in which we're going to use that money. One is that we're going to continue reducing our debt. We believe our debt-to-equity ratio, our leverage ratio, should be somewhere in the 2.5 to 3.5 range. That will go up and down depending on our acquisition strategy and depending on how we feel about the capital markets and future financing. We are very driven to innovate into the business and build our business internally. We believe we have some very good sources of organic growth. I'll talk about those in a little bit. The other area where we believe we can get some operational leverage is through our sales force. We have a very highly efficient and very effective sales force. We have lots of data that show that they make a difference every time they walk into the store, and we have the goal of increasing our sales, our field resources by 7 to 10% a year, and we've been tracking on that for the last year. And lastly, we believe that there's an environment today that has been created with the FDA expanding its jurisdiction over its regulatory regime over the remaining portions of OTP, other tobacco products, has stressed a lot of smaller companies. We've been spending the last couple of years investing in building our infrastructure to deal with the FDA, and it's a very expensive process, but we now have it in place, and other companies who have not made that investment are now faced with a ticking time bomb in which they have about 18 months in order to meet all the regulatory requirements. And we believe that there are some very attractive acquisition candidates out there that are stressed with that, at very attractive multiples. So the second part I'd like to talk about is our brands. At its core, Turning Point Brands is a brand company. We love brands, we know brands, we know how to feed them, we know how to grow them, and it really is the core of our business. We have two principal brands. The first that I'm going to talk about is Stoker's. Stoker's is our brand for the smokeless environment market. Our relationship with Stoker's started in 2003 when we purchased a Stoker's company. They specialized in big bag product. So where a chew is normally sold in 3-ounce packets, they sold a pound at a time. It gives you a kind of funny image because not like you can carry around a pound of tobacco in your pockets. But it's a very good product. It actually is extremely well made, and its value is only in buying in large quantities if the consumers love the product. Now, when we took over when we bought that brand, and most of this management team who you were introduced to earlier, has been around since this time period. We bought that brand. The brand was about 3-4 share in the marketplace. We identified that this is a brand that had legs, had a lot of empathy with consumers. Consumers saw it as this family-run business where the family sits around the kitchen table making the decisions and they're cooking up their flavors on the stove. It just had that sort of empathy with consumers as not big tobacco. So my management team got together, we identified it, we improved the packaging. We identified the stores that we thought it could sell. And remember, big bag, it's kind of hard to put into a small format C-store. And we started moving the product out. We took that brand from 3-4 share, which it was in 2003. Today it's a 17 share brand, it's the second largest brand in the category. And it's outperforming the category by anywhere from 5 to 10% since we started expanding it out. So it's been very successful. So in 2008, management team sat down and looked at the business and saw that we were fairly isolated. If you draw an OTP map, it's about a $10 billion category. And we were in two fairly small slivers. We were in chew, which was about $300 million and declining, and papers, which is about a little less than $200 million and was sort of stable. And so management team sat down and said, this is not a place to be over the long term. And so we sat down and looked at the map and looked at all the what categories were growing, what categories were shrinking, which one had size, and the top brand assets. And we said, okay, we're going to take our brands and we're going to march these brands across the landscape and go into some new categories, which was kind of interesting because at the time we didn't know of any other company that's ever done that in tobacco. A lot of people tried. I can give you lots of examples of brands that have failed, but I guess we had some aspirations, and we just decided we were going to do it. So the first one we did was Stoker's. We took Stoker's out of chew, brought it over to Moist Snuff, and we decided that we were going to go compete against two of the largest tobacco companies in the world. We were going to go against Reynolds and Philip Morris. Now to do that, we knew we had to be innovative. So first innovation was that we decided to package it. Moist Snuff is generally packaged in a 1.2-ounce can. I'm sure most of you have seen it at some point in your lives. We decided to come out in a 12-ounce tub. Actually put 10 cans of material in one container. Now, clearly that communicates to the consumer that you're saving money on a bunch of packaging. And so we also priced it at a good value price. Now, the industry had never seen anything like that, which is, so I think we got a lot of visibility just by being in a different package. But what was really important is that we changed the way Moist Snuff is made. Moist Snuff is generally made in fairly large facilities. They use a process that I call hard fermentation. We could not do that. It cost about $60 million to build a large Moist Snuff plant, a fermentation plant. At the time, we were very heavily leveraged. So we came up with a different way. And this way is a little different. It's more biological, less pressure and steam. It works the leaf naturally. And what it does is it creates a product that has a lot of characteristics that consumers love. For instance, you're not breaking the leaf up, so you can cut it longer. It's softer. It forms better in your mouth. You don't get all the flyers in your mouth. And the flavor lasts a lot longer. So it was actually a point of differentiation. Now, so we entered in the market with this kind of oddball tub, with this product that's made differently than everybody else. And since we entered the market, it's been the fastest growing moist snuff in the marketplace. And obviously we started from a very low base, but it's continued that growth as we've gotten forward. It's now around 2.7 share in a very large market. Moist snuff is a $3.5 billion market. It grows somewhere between 2-4% a year in terms of tonnage. And it takes pricing every year. So it's a great place to be. It's actually the best place to be in OTP, and we're doing fairly successful on that. Now, With the tub, we were growing fairly consistently, but its format itself is kind of self-limiting. Okay, you can't put six tubs in a C-store. They'd have to take out probably 15 products to get those six in. So starting in the summer of in 2015, after test marketing for about a year and a half, different pricing and merchandising platforms, we took our product into cans, and we've been introducing the cans. Now, putting the product into cans, what it does, it takes us out of a marketplace that's pretty well defined by about 30,000 stores that can handle the tubs, into a marketplace that with 150,000, 160,000 stores that can handle the cans. And the bulk of Moist Enough is sold in stores that can only handle the cans. So by putting into the cans, we were able to expand this potential market. We've been working it for the last year and a half. It's done fairly well. It's basically matched what it did in the test market. And so it's tracking along at the same growth path. And we have a lot of aspirations for the Moist Snuff, and we think it has a great, great future. So our second brand is smoking. In the smoking section of our business is Zig-Zag. Zig-Zag's a very iconic brand. It's been around over 100 years. It was the first interleaved paper, which is why it came up, why Zig-Zag was the name. We bought the rights to North American rights to Zig-Zag for cigarette papers in 1997. It is the number one premium cigarette paper. It is considered the standard in the industry. Just like with Stoker's, we looked at Zig-Zag and said, this is a brand that is bigger than its category, that we thought it can do more. So we saw this adjacent market called MYO cigar wraps, and think of the outer shell of a machine-made cigar, and then just the outer shell, so the consumer can take whatever it wants to put in there. You put cigarette tobacco, pipe tobacco, cigar tobacco, herbs, anything that would burn can go into it. This is unlike the Moist Snuff, which was populated by two of the largest tobacco companies in the world. This was a segment that was populated by fairly unsophisticated companies, didn't have a very good sales force, couldn't get into mainstream C-stores. They sort of lived on the fringe. Now we came in with a great brand, put together some great packaging. It was a very good product. Sales force was very directed to get it into the stores. We came in within 2 years. We had over 50% of this segment. This segment was about the same size as papers. And we had over 50% of the segment. We now have 80% of the segment. Okay, so this is incredibly successful. It's a combination, great brand, well-executed sales programs with a very good product that consumers enjoy. So with Stoker's in smokeless and with Zig-Zag in smoking, we feel we have two bedrock brands that gives us the ability to grow. And I'll talk about some of the results we've gotten that in a couple of minutes. One of the purposes of the IPO was to take advantage of the environment that I spoke about with the FDA. The FDA stressing these companies, free up our balance sheet so we would have the resources to be able to move on some of these companies. And in the past 6 months, we've actually accomplished two acquisitions, and I'll take you through them. But before I do that, the way we look at acquisitions is there's kind of two types. One is what we call plug and play. We have a very good distribution system. We've got Salesforce that reach over 100,000 stores through various mechanisms. We feel like we have a very good platform to plug products into it. We either take a product that go out and buy a product that has been around for a long time, a bunch of overhead associated with it, go buy the company, get rid of all the overhead, put it into our sales force, start taking orders, and immediately improve the profitability of the product and start moving. But they're also, just like with Stoker's, when we bought Stoker's in 2003, it was a small regional brand, had very few salespeople, didn't really get a lot of marketing love. We could take that brand and use our professional staff to upgrade the packaging, upgrade the positioning, give it to our professional sales force, and start expanding its distribution. There are regional brands still left in the OTP market that have empathy with consumers. And I'm not saying we can do what we did with Stoker's, take it from 4 share to 17 share of any particular category, but certainly there's a lot of brands that we can grow out of the regional niches and take them national through our sales force and through our marketing organization. And so that's sort of what we call plug and play. The other type of acquisitions we're looking at are acquisitions that allow us to, what I call snap on or bolt on infrastructure. These are companies that give us capabilities that we don't have in-house, that would be very expensive to build, that allow us to get into new markets. And I'll take you through two acquisitions was one of each type, and I'll take you through. In any case, because of the FDA, the pressure the FDA is putting on valuations, we believe that most of these acquisitions will be immediately accretive to earnings. So just by bringing them in, taking out the overhead, or putting this additional capability in place, it immediately brings that profitability to the company. The first acquisition we did was Wind River Smokeless Brands, the chewing tobacco brands. These were regional brands. They also specialize in larger format, either 16-ounce, 1-pound bags, or multiple packages of smaller bags. They had about 2% of the market. But what's remarkable about these brands is that they had very limited distribution, so only in about 25% of the market. So in the stores they were in, they had 8 shares. So obviously they had an affinity with consumers. They were able to attract consumers, very consistent business, and with limited distribution. So we believe, and sometime later this year, we'll start doing it, we will take these brands out of their little niche stores and bring them more widely. And if they can replicate that 8% share within the stores that we bring them to, we believe there's a lot of potential growth here. So while it's not, I don't suspect this will be as big as Stoker's, it is sort of on the Stoker's model. Taking a small regional brand, taking it out of his niches, and seeing it continue to grow. The second one, which is a bolt-on infrastructure, was a company called Vapor Beast. We believe that they are the leading distributor to vape stores, which is, just to back up a little bit, I'm sure you've all seen the growth of vapor products. They started as kind of fake-out cigarettes, we call them Cigalikes. And then as people started adapting this particular consumption, technology came in, because they are a technology product. They're driven by a battery, there's a lot of electronics in it. Technology started coming in, and there was an explosion of formats. There were different batteries, tanks, atomizers, liquids in every different size, flavor, color, whatever. It got to be where there's thousands of SKUs. Traditional retail could not handle that amount of that kind of product assortment. You know, a C-store has a couple thousand SKUs. If they'd have to double them in order to satisfy, 60-70% of vapors as they walk in the store. So capitalism being what it is, a new format started opening to service consumers who wanted these products. And one of the channels that opened up is a channel we call vape shops, which essentially service people who want to do this vapor. Vapor Beast was very early in China service e-stores, being able to buy in from China, buying different liquids, being able to service e-stores and as a one-stop shop in order to service, be able to provide products for the consumers. Its revenues were about $54 million in the 12 months that preceded the purchase. And we talk about the So they have about 4,500 different customers. This is a market of about 8,000 stores. Now, what's interesting about Vapor Beast, and what we loved about the company, is that they have a very good infrastructure. They have a lot of the programs and processes and internal sales force that you need to succeed in this particular industry. What we also loved about it is that there are other trade channels that are very similar to vape shops, in that traditional tobacco wholesalers do not service these channels. One of them we call accessory shops, which is a channel that services a wide variety of smoking experiences. With this infrastructure, we believe that we can take this company into some of these other channels, starting to service other these channels. So rather than 8,000 store, which is roughly about the size of the vape shop universe, there's probably another 8,000 accessory shops. And we believe there are other stores that also can be serviced by them. So it gives us a great distribution, a great selling engine, a great distribution platform for a whole host of products, both our products and third-party products, essentially the way I look at it, we're buying a sales organization that pays for itself by handling third-party products. And it gives us a great platform for our own products. Okay, so how did it all play out financially? Well, essentially we've improved everything across the board. And I'll just give you some highlights. Our sales are now over $200 million. It's $206 million in 2016, up 4.5%. That is a record. Our gross profit broke the $100 million mark, and that is also a record. Our net income increased to $26.9 million. I will say that that's a little bit of an anomaly. Essentially, there's a revaluation of some of our NOLs, and which flows through the income statement, increases the net income. Our total debt was reduced $76 million. So if you look at where we started the year and how we ended the year, we're in much better shape. Our sales are up, our gross margin is up, we're producing net income, and our debt is certainly much more manageable and positions us for our long-term strategic goals. Okay, just when you look within the segments, in smokeless, driven by Stoker's, is up 4.9% to $78 million. That is a new record. Zig-Zag with smoking products grew to 4.8% to $111 million. And NewGen, which is how we classify the vapor and some of these new technologies, increased to $17.3 million. Basically, across the board, we're fairly successful. When you break down our sales, if you look at 2016 actual, smoking was just over 54%. Most of that is Zig-Zag. Zig-Zag actually represents a little over 50% of the company sales. Smokeless is called roughly 40%, 38%, and NewGen 8%. Now, if you look at 2016 and you adjust it on a pro forma basis for what the last 12 months, what the acquired companies do, it does change our mix quite significantly. Smoking is now a little over 40%, smokeless around 30%, and NewGen is also about 30%. So we changed the complexion with NewGen getting a little more weight in everything. If you look at some comparisons of net sales from versus 2015, you can see that we've been up on all the measures. I will point out that the gross margin was 49.7%, roughly 50%. With the acquisition of VaporBeast, as you look at our numbers going forward, that number will go down in a percentage basis, but more importantly, the dollars are going to go up on a dollar basis. And since you don't, the way we talk about it in our management, we don't eat percentages, we eat dollars. So we're very focused on producing dollars. The distribution business is inherently a lower margin business than a branded business, but it does have great opportunity for sales growth. So we're pretty excited about it. Looking at our stock, we went public at $10 a share. Our stock is a little bit, as a smaller company, is a little bit more volatile than some of the other stocks. But if you look across the year, the stock price generally has gone up. I think that comes as people get to know us a little bit, you get to see what a great business this is, the kind of cash flow that we produce, and the fact that in all our focus brands, being Stoker's with MST and Chew, and Zig-Zag in both papers and CYO cigar wraps, we've grown share in all four of those for the last couple of quarters. I think that's starting to be reflected in our stock price. Okay, so beginning 2017. We've continued this progress. There's a couple of major events that have taken place. First one is we refinanced our debt with the help of Fifth Third. They were very influential and helped us restructure debt from our balance sheet. We significantly reduced our interest costs. We've taken about $5 million out of our interest expense through this restructuring. That was completed in February. You'll start to see some of the results came in the first quarter. We'll start seeing it fully reflected in the second quarter. We've also continued to grow our market share in all four of our focus categories, in moist, in chew, in papers, and in MRS cigar wraps. We outperform the category in each of those segments. The other thing of note is in March, we started talking to a company called Vapor Shark, which is sort of in the same business as Vapor Beast. They have a much higher rate of their sales is behind the proprietary products. They also have a set of franchise stores, which we consider captured wholesale. Essentially, these franchise stores have to buy from Vapor Shore. We think there's some great possibilities there. We're in the process of going through our due diligence and trying to understand the company. We developed a strategic partnership with them, and we're looking to see whether we want to advance that to a more intimate relationship as we go forward. But we do think there's some great possibilities there. First quarter continued the positive trends that you saw in 2016. Our sales, now because we have integrated the two acquisitions, is up significantly. I think the number is like 34%. It's up to $66.8 million in sales. Gross profit also increased, again, because of the acquisition, to close to $28 million. Gross margin, again, as I mentioned, gross margin percentage will go down, but focus on the gross profit numbers, because that's the thing that drives shareholder value, is up. Net income was actually down on a reported basis, but in doing the debt refinancing, there was some deferred financing costs that had to be written off, and so you really should add about $3.8 million to the net income number to see how the actual operations of the company performed. So on that basis, the net income went up from $2.2 million to $5.7 million. And the way we internally measure ourselves is through something we call adjusted EBITDA. It essentially focuses on the ongoing ability of the company to generate cash, and that was up about 9.5% to $13.6 million. So overall, a fairly good quarter. We like where we are. We've done a lot of work over the years to position us to grow, to put the infrastructure in place, to put the platforms in place that allow us to grow into the future. With this new improved capital structure, it gives us a lot of flexibility. Part of the bank refinancing is the ability to borrow up to another $40 million under the current structure, which should help us in any acquisitions activity that we want to pursue. We have very strong market positions over the last couple of quarters. We've grown across the board, market share across the board. Now, not some of these markets go up and down, so sales didn't necessarily increase every quarter, but our market share did. What was available in the marketplace, we took a bigger slice of, which is like the way I like to think about it. We love the upside potential of the two acquisitions. Vapor Beast has a great platform. It touches about 4,000 stores. They don't buy 100% of their products from us, and we're working to improve that and getting close to that 100% number. And as I mentioned with Wind River, it has 8 share in the stores that it sells in, but only 2 shares nationally, just because they've had limited distribution. We believe we bring capabilities to be able to change that. And looking further into the future, we believe there's a number of accretive acquisitions out there. We've had conversations with people, nothing to disclose at this point, but there are companies that are looking for strategic alternatives given the stress of the FDA. And we believe that we're a pretty good platform. With the infrastructure that we have, we'd be able to take these companies in, deal with the FDA, as well as provide them with distribution and marketing help that can help take their brands, reach their full maximum potential. So with that, I thank you all for coming. I appreciate you being here, and thank you very much.